Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends. So I have a cutting edge guest on today. He is the owner and writer of the Wizard the Fighter blog. He wrote and released Ultraviolet Grasslands and Witchburner. He is a member or one of the heads of the Hydra Cooperative, Luka Rajek. How you doing, Luka?
Hey, Hobbs. Doing good. Thanks. And greetings from Seoul to everybody.
Yeah, that's crazy. Did I say your name right?
No, you didn't.
Okay.
I was going to say that as the second
thing. I was going to ask you what it was before we started, and then I forgot. You want to tell me? Tell everyone.
You're not really close. It's Reyes.
Reyes?
Reyes. So imagine Reyes? That the J is pronounced like a Y and the C is pronounced like TZ.
Nice. All right. I got this. Luka Reyes.
Yeah, perfect. Spot on. Well done.
I should have asked you that in the beginning. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's fun to get it out of the way, and it's also good to talk about. I mean, you know, names are hard to get right, so it's good to ask.
Yeah, I thought that's kind of a funny story because I was on Facebook and someone was asking me. This was, you know, last week or something. They didn't ask me. Obviously, they just asked, you know, whoever follows them or whatever. You know, what's some good product or OSR product? And I was like, I said something, and then I go, hey, you should check out Luka Reyes because he's kind of like walking this cool edge between what I call the art house and, you know, OSR. And then I was like, hey, wait a second. I should have him on the show. And I had no idea where you were from or anything like that. And then I finally asked you, where are you? And you're like, oh, Seoul, Korea. And I'm like, wow, what time is it there?
Well, it's the morning here, so I'm like, what, 16 hours ahead of you, I think.
Yeah, no kidding.
I greet you from the future.
Like, yeah, you're in Tuesday already. You're still not on Monday time.
Yeah, it's Tuesday, yeah.
So how often does that affect you compared, like, dealing with, you know, working with a Hydra Cooperative or
all the
anything
time.
Else?
Yeah, it's all the time. It comes into play, like... just with meetings, it's a challenge to schedule them because you have to find like a time that's early enough in the evening for them, but not too early in the morning for me. So, you know, I did it a couple of times getting up at 5 a.m. to have a call, and I just not great. But
ouch.
But that part sort of works okay because afternoon in the U.S., morning here generally evens out. Like I might be at the office and okay, fine, take a call. It's okay. It's a bit harder to game, especially during the week because if there's an evening game, it's like, well, I'm in the office now. I'm being a grown-up person.
I got work to do.
Yeah. The place where it gets really kind of tough is because I'm originally from Europe, from Slovenia, though I was born in Yugoslavia. But that country doesn't exist anymore. So now I'm from Slovenia. Yeah, long story. But it's sometimes I want to like chat with my friends back home or catch up with people. And then it's like, no, wait, they're all asleep. They're going to be asleep for another 8 hours. This is terrible. This is terrible.
No kidding. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So we got a lot of stuff that I want to talk about. So let's get this introduction out of the way. Normally, I kind of follow this format. How do we know each other? I put we don't, but what did you put on here on the outline?
Well, I've seen you around the OSR a lot. Like I've seen people mention you. I've seen people share your podcast, even though I didn't listen to too much of it. I listened to one episode with Jason Schultes because he shared it in the Hydra Cooperative. He was like, I was on a podcast. You should listen to this. And I thought, whoa, wow, okay, let's listen.
All right. Well, what'd you think? It must not have been that good.
No, it was fun, but it was great. But it's one of those things. I already have a big stack of podcasts, and then it's you know that feeling where it's like I'm going to add one more thing, and then it's like I already have 20.
Yeah,
I'll wait. And
my wife does anyway. My wife knows that thing.
Yeah. I do a lot of the housekeeping duties around my household. So it's like I'm the one who gets up in the morning, makes the coffee, makes the breakfast, and then my wife stumbles out of bed. Do I have to be awake already? So yeah, I sympathize with your wife.
Just one more thing. It a lot of times can be a lot. So
yeah,
I understand completely. So I obviously have seen you around the OSR a lot as well, and I appreciate you saying that about me. Thank you. All right, so let's talk about the weekly gaming briefly. You want to start or you want me to?
You can start. Have the first shot.
Yeah, it's just kind of what I've played lately. I just released an episode last week, so this probably won't drop this week, but next week. But we'll see if I get crazy or not, or however Brasco is doing in editing. So yesterday I played the first session of a new campaign with my family, which we call the Green River Gamers Association. Doesn't that sound Midwest? Yes.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, and I've never played Castles and Crusades before. None of us had. We bought the books at GameholeCon early November, and we've been threatened to do it since Thanksgiving, and we finally got around to it. I talked about it at length on my other podcast, Random Screed, today, so we won't get into it too much. I also ran my Kalamata BX game, which is a live stream game, which was fun. Had a blast, as always. And then Sword and Spell is like an OD&D 74 retro clone that I found this guy and hidden in Discord on Tenkar's Tavern channel. And he's running some game, and it only uses voice. So he just talks to whoever's playing. And if you want a map, he gives you, it's just like you're sitting there back in 1979 and he's just talking to you voice wise and you got to figure everything out from there. And so it's pretty crazy. You ever played like that before?
On Discord all the time. Like the online games I run are mostly voice only.
So you don't go on like a Google share something, a photo and share a map or talk.
I will upload a map. Or a photo or like a sketch of stuff. Yeah. But yeah. Otherwise it's like voice only. This was just voice. No map, nothing.
No map, no nothing. No, yeah, nothing at all. And he rolls all the dice.
Oh, so, is dedication.
Yeah, it's old school. Like he'll say, yeah, okay, there's like a troglodyte there. And he has this funky way and he basically asks your action and then you hear him rolling a bunch of dice, and then he just starts to tell you what happened, you know? So it's like, it's kind of tense.
That must be tense. Like, I'm often the other way. I'll outsource a lot of my rolling to the players. Like, I'll tell them, okay, one of you, let's see, you roll the encounter check now. And they're like, what, me? Yeah, roll a D100. Let's see what happens to you.
Yeah, let's see what happens. That's why, I mean, that's kind of the way I play as well. I play to see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. And I like to outsource a lot of like the DM side rolling of the dice to the players, because then it's their fault if they stumble into the dragon and get fanbaited. It wasn't me.
I agree with you. My brother, he always says, I'm not doing that. I'm not rolling. You do it. I'm not going to be responsible for that.
Yeah, I've got a few players like that. It's like, it's so funny. There's always like one player who's like, I'm not going to roll the dice. I don't want to be responsible. And then there's like one player who's like, I get to roll the dice. Yes, I will do it. There's a red button. Let me push the button. And
it's like, yeah.
And then I usually stop for a moment. I'm like, are you sure? This could be very dangerous. This, like, from an in-game perspective, your character would think this could be dangerous. And the player is like, that sounds brilliant. I am doing that.
Can't wait to do it. Yeah, that reminds me. One of the Kalamata games I ran last week was with Gabriel Perez Gishardi, Adam Miskevich, and Gerardo Turisto. Both Gabriel and Gerardo are from Uruguay. I don't know if you know him or not. He used to have Gerardo did a blog. I think it might have been like a Middle Earth blog, but he talked a lot about his Aztec game called Itza.
I remember some mentions of Itza, but
yeah, it was a while ago. It was a while ago, but he is that guy. He was playing Kalamata, and he was playing a fat matronly woman who was married to a pirate, and now she tries to make a living by selling rum or drink. So the whole session, he's doing is trying to scrape up stuff to make alcoholic beverages for his customers. They're walking through crypts in the middle of this hostile jungle, and he's like, yeah, I want to take something from this plant and see if we can make alcohol out of it. And I'm like, okay, whatever, you know. He was definitely a red button pusher.
I love players like that. Those are like my favorite kind. It actually sort of segues into the weekly gaming thing, because I haven't done that much gaming. It's been the new year. So my regular group over here in Korea scattered. Like half of them went back to the States to visit their family over the holidays. And then it was like, well, that doesn't work. So one thing I did was run an online game on Discord, testing some stuff for one thing I'm writing. Essentially, I wanted to test out a neighborhood generator I'd made. Nice. The result was the neighborhood generator was complete shit. Oh. It was terrible. I'm sorry. Is that going to have to be beeped out?
Nope.
No. Okay. Yeah, but the game was lots of fun. It was essentially the it was a flail snails game with just really basic stripped down rules, and the players were from all kinds of different systems dragged into this city, this otherworldly city, by a summoner who'd made a boo-boo and was trying to get somebody else, but then these schmoes were the only people they had. And
how unfortunate. Yes,
it was very unfortunate. It was a lot of fun. I was actually surprised that only one of the player characters ended up dying, but then again, there were those classic moments when one character, a first level ranger, just ended up succeeding at like four breath weapon saving throws in a row. So in the end, I just said like, okay, let's give your ranger, for finishing this adventure, a special ability that they get a bonus to breath saving
apparently throws. Yeah.
Because it was brilliant. Like, any one of those he'd have failed, he'd have died. And you know, this was I think he was using BX, so he had to roll over 16 to make the save.
Yeah, not easy.
So yeah, brilliant stuff. It comes down to a lot of random events. So I was actually using a lot of the Dungeon Dozen and Last Gasp Grimoire generators, which sort of ties back into Jason Schultes.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. You know that I don't bleep anything because I had Jason Schultes on the show. So no, I'm just kidding.
in normal conversations, he's very polite.
Yes, he is.
but that kind of having fun tables with unexpected results on them is actually one of my favorite things, and I like to mix and match them with different systems. So that was really great. And in terms of other gaming, there was an interesting board game I got to play, Dominant Species, by a guy named Chad Jensen, who's apparently a big name in wargaming or strategy games. I don't know.
One of my
players brought this very involved board game, and we've played it four times, and every single time we got some of the rules wrong. And this was nice. Incredibly frustrating because, like, on the internet, everybody says how this game has the most amazing rules. They're so clearly written. It's so well done. And I kept on getting it wrong.
How's that make you feel?
It makes me feel, on the one hand, stupid. On the other hand, angry. And particularly annoyed because I actually like the game a lot.
Awesome.
So it was one of those things where... I even saw a discussion by the author, and he's like saying, no, it's like dominant and dominance are very different words, and they refer to different mechanics. All of us mixed up those mechanics every single time.
Oh,
and then the final scoring of the game, like in the rule book, there's only half of the scoring because the other half of the scoring is on the final card that you pull to initiate the final scoring. So it's like, no, it's totally clear. You end the game by playing that card, and on that card, it says how you do a scoring. And then you do the final scoring. And it's like,
wow.
Would it have killed you to repeat yourself? So wrapping back into Dungeon Dozen, and I guess games, if games have tables, I don't mind if the game repeats the tables at the end of the game book. Just so I can access all of them. Like, it's fine. It's fine to say the same thing twice because,
in some ways, that's new age, I'd say newer layout. People want that stuff to be where they're going to need it. And if they need it at the end, then it's okay to be at the end. And if you need it to explain it in the beginning, during your, have a good index, right? Hyperlinks a spread page that does the service that you need it to do. I totally agree with that. That's awesome. All right.
Yeah, I think so.
So the next segment is Everything About You, where basically I try to give one thing about myself that the listeners may not know. We're up on episode 42 now. So this is a lot of things, Luca.
So now it's your turn to talk about the meaning of life.
Oh, boy. I don't know about that. They already know that probably. I talk about that all the time. I am going to say that a lot of the people that I interview and have on my show are very metal. It seems like a large part of the OSR crowd is metal, but I'm really not that metal. I'm just kind of a laid back Midwestern guy. I don't listen to country music, but I don't really listen to anything hard anymore. But I really do love the community that's surrounding the DCC group, the Hydro Cooperative guys, the DIY guys, all those guys are just great. So that's it. That is the secret of life right there. What do you got for us? Anything?
Oh, yes. I have one that might be shocking to a lot of people. a place to go for figuring out how to write good stories on a budget and how to catch people's heartstrings is the Hallmark Channel.
You love the Hallmark Channel?
I love watching some of the shows on the Hallmark Channel. Yeah. Because they do amazing things with cliches. the reason this is a good thing for a dungeon master is because oftentimes when you introduce like an NPC or a location or a set piece, you want to just like hammer home that cliche because you want the players to get an image in their head fast and then just run with it. Because it's probably not the core of the adventure. Like you're in a dungeon and then some guy pops up. Like, are you going to spend 5 minutes getting to the core of it? No, you want to run with the cliche. And Hallmark is actually good for doing that. And for being sort of kind to its characters, which is really useful when you put in an NPC that is kind of unpleasant, but relatable, and then the players feel a little bit bad after they kill them.
All right. That is a powerful everything about you. Give Luca dropping some advice about the Hallmark Channel. I feel like this should be now renamed to Guilty Pleasures. here we go. All right. So the main topic is basically what I said. I'm finding, like I called it cutting edge earlier. I think the Hydra Cooperative in general are kind of really good at this. And I actually asked Humza and Robert to be on pretty soon to talk about it. But you're already doing that yourself. It's this fine line. It's not all the way to into the deep of the DIY. It's not super gonzo. Like it's not as far as the gore or the nudity of Lamentations of the Flame Princess. Mm. And you're definitely not kind of in the super gonzo DCC era. You're still using Labyrinth Lord almost all the time. But you're still...
Well, most of Hydra is. I generally use a stripped down 5th edition these days.
Well, all right. That's cool. But the idea is you still are kind of walking this, treading this line that's really awesome between... I guess art and usability at the table, maybe. What do you think about that? You think that's true or not true? Or
I think actually a lot of people are treading it the same way, but just treading it in slightly different ways. So in the Hydra Cooperative, different people are doing different things. The Slumbering Earths and Dunes is definitely Labyrinth Lord all the way, but making it unusual and quirky and fun, which I really love. I love Chris's work and the stuff he's doing. That
I love Chris. Great guy.
Oh yeah, Chris is great people. Chris is really fun, and working with him is a great experience. It's been a fantastic experience for me all the way through. On my stuff personally, I try to make it weird and strange and appealing to me, but here it's a lesson from Stephen King, actually. Like, if you look at Stephen King, okay, can I go into this?
Sure,
it's a bit of a digression, but okay, sure. Okay, so if you think about Stephen King, the thing right there, it's a bit like Hallmark. He's got this small town in Maine that's happening, you know, there's the foliage, the leaves turning red and yellow. And the horror is there where you have this beautiful scene, ordinary location, and then something weird happens. And that's something I really like. So it's something that is also reflected in the kind of things I write, which is probably why it's not that far into the full gonzo or gore or things like that. Because I just feel like if it gets that strongly weird or terrifying, it desensitizes both the reader and the players at the end of the day. So I don't know that it's a kind of intentional stance between art and classical games. I think it's just preference at the end of the day.
I would agree with you. I think that it can't all be weird, or it's not really weird. That's the normal. So you have to compound how normal something is and then allow the weird to come. And so then it'll feel weird or horrific or whatever the other emotion is you're looking for. So I think that's definitely a well-known, I don't know, I wouldn't say well-known, but certainly in other medium, they use it a lot, but not necessarily in role-playing games.
Yeah.
Because it's hard, for what first, it's hard to write that in a supplement. I feel like you're talking more about Witchburner than you are Ultraviolet Grasslands.
Yes, because that is true.
That's all kind of weird. So, and your actual use of color in your product is kind of interesting because it's sort of monochromish for Witchburner. I don't actually own Witchburner. I've seen the cover, but I do own Ultraviolet Grasslands. And you even have a unique approach, by the way, you're kind of writing it through chapters on your Patreon, right?
Yeah. Chapter by chapter, pretty much.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about anything about that, or do you want to just
Mention it. And actually, you're right. Like, the Ultraviolet Grasslands is a lot weirder. It's I call that one my psychedelic doom metal point crawl. And that one is very, very influenced by 1970s psychedelia and doom metal. And just this idea of a crazy long trip somewhere weird. Whereas you're right, Witchburner is monochrome. Even there's a limited edition coming out in a couple of weeks, and it is also black and white with more art in it.
That's going to be on Matt Kay's website. That's his name, right?
Yeah, on Exalted Funeral. Yeah,
Exalted Funeral. The same place you can pick up Mothership in print, people. I see people still asking about that. That's where you can get it.
Yeah, and he will also bundle it together, and he's also willing to send like a big package to Europe if you want that or something like that. You can email him. He's really cool as well.
All right, do you want to talk about your art, because you are an artist as well? First of all, you do your cutesy little drawings, but I think you also did. When I say that, it's kind of your stick figure-ish characterizations.
Yeah, pointy helmet and poncho. Yeah. And Demi Warlock. Yeah,
I think people have probably seen that. But you also did the cover for the Eld book by Chris, right? The third Canton.
I did all the interior art on that one. And I've done the cover and the interior art on the fourth book, What Ho, Frog Demons.
Okay, so that is attached to the other part, because I haven't gotten that yet. I have the other three, but I don't have that. So I've been trying to get Chris on this show for quite a while to talk about point crawls, but he's been rather busy.
Yeah, he's had a busy year.
Yeah, definitely a busy year. All right, so you seem like you're surprised I was going to talk about this, but on your blog today, and then you obviously shared it around on social media, G+, all the places that a social media RPG junkie like myself.
I didn't share it on Facebook.
No? It's interesting because one of the people who's commonly been on the show, Eric Hoffman, when I was using the term fantasy heartbreaker, he's like, that's a dumb term. Why would anyone want to call their game fantasy heartbreaker? And to be honest, I didn't know the history or the etymology of the term fantasy heartbreaker. And then you talked about it today. Yeah. I found that pretty interesting. Did you, so you were a 4G at the time or?
No, I wasn't. I was alone. I was like one of the first people to bring role-playing games to my country back in 96. And so in 96, okay, I have to go back into history, but okay. I was born in Yugoslavia back in the early 80s. Then in the late 80s, my dad got a job in Africa, in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania. So we moved there. So I lived there for 8 years. During that time, the wars happened in Yugoslavia. The whole country broke apart. So by the time we came back to Slovenia, where I'm from, it was a different country. And I moved from an international school with like kids from 60, 70 different countries, where I'd learned about Dungeons & Dragons, where I played it, where I got my first set of dice because a kid forgot them. And then I didn't tell them that they forgot them so I could get dice, because there were no game shops. So basically, is it theft if the person lost them or not? Anyway, I still have that D20. It's a terrible D20. So I came back from there, and I actually brought role-playing games to my town. But my town is like this small town up in the mountains in the Alps, 4,000 people or so, remote as heck. I was basically creating an RPG community from scratch, and I couldn't get books. There were no game stores with these kinds of books. I didn't have a car. There was basically no public transport. So we were there pretty much isolated for like 4 years. And the nearest place I would go didn't really have game stores. I think, what year did third edition come out? 99 or so?
2000. I would guess 2002 or three, but I don't know.
Yeah, probably... like around that time, Amazon right appeared. There. And I remember like I used a bunch of my pocket money and stuff I saved from doing odd jobs to buy Alternity and then to buy third edition. And these were like treasured possessions. We even had to order dice online. And this was in the early 2000s. So it was really pricey. And it was really hard to find people to talk about, well, role-playing games with. So I actually was interested. I'd been trying to write my own games. I'd been trying to make them better. In essence, I was forced to do it because every time we played role-playing games, I was translating on the fly from English to Slovenian for my players, which you can imagine was kind of funny. So
I really have no way of even trying to imagine, honestly.
Yeah, it's like... it's funny. You
I'll trust you.
Yeah. And so I came across this this essay, and obviously I'd only been exposed to Dungeons and Dragons and Alternity, basically, and a bit of White Wolf, because there was nothing available. To come across that essay just made me feel really uncomfortable and like I'd been wasting a lot of time and like I'd been doing things wrong. Because obviously there had been problems with running the game. Like it was hard to find players. The game was really looked down upon. I mean, people were like, what is this game? You're not playing to win? What kind of game is this? What are you? Imagine the early 70s when role-playing games first appeared in the US. Well, this was similar. This was the first time role-playing games had appeared in my country. And then I come across this essay, which is essentially, yeah, to my mind, I read it and it's like, oh yeah, you like Dungeons and Dragons? Well, your games are crap. And you're writing that? Well, it shows you're not critical and you're not innovative and you have, well, you know, no idea. This is just not going to work. So, and at the same time, it was this community which set itself up as like, we are the home of independent role-playing. We are the ones developing role-playing theory.
Yep.
And for me as a kid who wanted to make games, like coming across that first and having no other audience locally that would say like, no, it's okay, what you're doing is fine, was pretty much a big blow. It made me very uncomfortable about, it made me more uncomfortable about playing Dungeons and Dragons for a while. And that was sort of the genesis. After many years, I finally got around to writing that little response.
Yeah, so you guys should check that out at, your blog is just wizardthieffighter.com, right?
Yes, pretty much. I couldn't believe it when I saw that domain name hadn't been used. So I was like, fine, I'm getting that.
So, you know, WTF means something else around here. You're aware
yes,
of that,
I
right?
do know that. Yes.
Okay.
I'm actually always surprised when some people are surprised that the acronym also refers to WTF. Like, I thought this was obvious. I thought this was like completely on the nose.
Then, it seems pretty obvious to me, but, you know, you never know. All right. So I guess you're working on another project chapter by chapter, right?
Yes. Actually, two of them at once, which was a terrible idea in retrospect.
So I have one of them written down here, Red Sky, Dead City. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So this one has been going on just a little bit longer. I had notes going back a couple of years. So I'm working on this one on the Patreon, and it's essentially a city that has the capital of the greatest empire that the world had seen until then is conquered by another empire, and this city is now going up in flames and has gone up in flames, and the players are there to plunder it and to plunder its holy sites and its necropolis. So for reference, the conquered empire, Ebet, was an empire that was heavily into living forever and bringing their ancestors around for tea time because they mummified them and preserved them, while the invading empire is all about reason and rationality and augmenting themselves with golem parts. So it's quite gonzo, and in many ways it's quite quite a terrible setting. All the factions there are not what you would, not factions you would want to put on the classical D&D alignment grid, because they would all be in the evil side of the grid. In the lawful evil corner of the grid, all of them. So it makes that grid a little bit irrelevant.
So, some of your, a lot of your products seem like maybe they have a deeper message. Is that you know, purposeful or not?
What do you mean by a deeper message?
Well, just like this. I mean, if you're talking about reasoning, thoughtful country conquering, or an empire conquering an empire that's more magical and, you know, older ideas, it just kind of sounds like there's a lot of relatable things in, you know, actual world history that exists. Or if you look at, I can't really compare Witchburner, but it's obviously about burning witches. So it's horror, but at the other side, it's also maybe something about prejudice, kind of, maybe, mm-hmm. or no.
Yeah.
So
it's about, basically it's about mass hysteria. Yeah.
So like they're kind of larger. It's not a, hey, here's my goblin adventure where, you know, you kill some goblins. You have some, it's art. It's almost art in itself as, and I think that's pretty cool. Mm. What's the other project you're working on?
So the other one is, so first of all, yes, you are right. There are themes that I look at, but I try not to hit people over the head with them. I just view them as a sort of like a red thread for connecting different things together. And since it's written as pretty much a sandbox, I find it interesting in the sense of a unique artistic and creative experience for the group when they play through it, because there is an overarching theme, but the way they will actually engage with it, what they will get out of it, is going to be different every time, because mm-hmm. it's random. It's built with random tables. You do not know what you come across. And this comes up quite often when I will run the same adventure with different groups, but because it's using random tables, the responses of the NPCs will be different. The encountered NPCs will be different, and the players' responses will also be different. So for example, with Red Sky, that city, one of the things that I'd initially done, which I've sort of veered away from, is I tried to make the whole thing very explicitly a satire written from the perspective of the conquerors. I've been moving away from that because I decided it was a bit of a cheap trick, especially because it's going to be about 150 pages. And at that point, I was just like, I don't want to write all this from the perspective of these prejudiced monsters. It's boring. But anyway, one of the first runs I did of that game, like one of the characters that came up was this crippled refugee beggar, a leper beggar. And one of the players is like, huh, I feel bad for the guy. I go into a shop, I buy a pie, I give him a pie. And I was like, huh, this is interesting. So then I rolled some reaction rolls, as one does. And the local invaders and conquerors were like, oh, this is... they were like, yes, he's abetting the conquered enemy, but at the same time, who's going to argue with this halfling buying a pie for a crippled old man? So, okay. But the crippled old man was very happy and surprised and said, like, oh, 1,000 blessings upon you to the character. And I was thinking, like, I have to do something for this. So I had a random table ready of, like, small random boons and blessings. So I had a player just roll on that. And the player ended up getting a pretty good blessing randomly. And after that, all of them, like the whole party, was like, ah, okay, this conquered empire who had been massively into slavery, mind control, raising undead hordes, they're not so bad because of one encounter with a crippled beggar, crippled refugee beggar.
Yeah.
And that loops back into the whole Hallmark thing. You like have like one character and it's relatable.
And it also kind of talks about how the play at the table is really what's the most important. You could say all you want about how terrible they are, but, oh, hey, they gave me something, so that rewards a certain particular action, so we're going to keep doing that or whatever. But
cool. Exactly. And so it's interesting. There's like this overarching theme, but then it breaks down.
And it could break down for everybody. You don't even know where it's going to go. It all depends.
Yeah,
emergent play. Love it.
Exactly. And as the DM, you don't even know where it's going to go. So I really love that. I love being surprised and just not knowing. So it's kind of fun when players are like, "Ah, you were expecting to beat us with that evil boss, but we beat him instead. Ha ha, we beat you." And a part of me is like thinking, no, this is actually amazing because I had no idea what you were going to do. I mean, I thought it would be funny throwing in a 35 hit dice unbeatable monster. I thought you guys were just going to run away from it, but you came up with a way to kill it. I think that's brilliant.
Great. That's why we do it, right? We don't know what the answers are. We just make the messes. You guys get to
come up whenever you want to. It's like, exactly. So I got sidetracked. And the other one you were mentioning, the other one that I'm working in chapters is a lot shorter. So it's provisionally called Long Winter, but my wife told me I have to come up with a more memorable name for it.
I did see that then on your blog, Long Winter.
Yeah. And
I think I even heard something about it. You're basically making something to survive winter catastrophe.
Yeah, it's a survival icebox. It's basically... it's similar setting wise to Witchburner. Let's say in that I don't specify it, but thematically some of the ideas in Witchburner or this setting are much more modern than in regular OSR games. It's a lot less fantasy, a lot more a melange of 18th, 19th, 20th century stuff, just jammed together with some magic on top. And Long Winter is much smaller. It's a small point crawl set in some mountain valleys where the winter descends and then it becomes terrible. And the players are then faced with the question of survival. So if you're going to play there, stop listening now because I'm going to give a bit of a spoiler. If you're planning to be the DM, this is useful. Now we can like now wave some spoiler alert or something, but it's like with a lot of my games, I try to make it a little bit of a bait and switch where the initial adventure, the way it's set up, does not necessarily lead to directly to the conclusion. So the initial quest might be please save the princess. And then you get there and you find out, no, the princess abducted herself because she's trying to start a rebellion. What do you do now? And I think this is a pretty classic DM move where you just put in slightly different expectations. And it's the same way here. It's basically building up this small detailed setting where it looks like it's one thing, but then it turns out, oh, it's going to be winter survival horror. Okay, if you weren't listening, you can start listening again now.
Spoiler over. Nice. Awesome. So we're edging up on the end of time already. So give me a second here. I want to show some great appreciation for my own patrons. So I always give a shout out to three patrons. Alan Rutledge, the first January patron. Thank you very much for being on my Patreon. I appreciate it. Isaac Eccles, a longtime patron. He upped his... because I'm that awesome, I guess, Luca. I don't know why, but he did, and I appreciate it. And Steve Sigety also.
We love patrons who do that.
Yes, it's fantastic. They're just like, hey, this is so good. I just want to give you another dollar. And I say thank you. I appreciate it. It helps keeping me involved and a lot of times capable of buying different products that I can read and talk to and be able to speak intelligently about. So thank you so much to those guys. My Patreon is www.patreon.com/OSRNHobbs if you'd like to join. Do you want to say, you want to put your patron out there?
Yeah, sure. But first, I'm just going to mention a shout out again to Steve Sigety because I sort of ran over his name with my reply to Hobbs. So shout out to Steve Sigety as well. But yeah, I also have a Patreon. It's Wizard Thief Fighter, patreon.com/wizard thief fighter. Really simple.
Perfect.
I generally post one chapter or two chapters a month, which like adds on to the existing stuff. So that's usually, well, I usually say it's going to be 5 or 6 pages. And then because I have trouble writing short things, or I don't know, or I write too much. I don't know. It's more. Okay.
Awesome.
I try to make it less. I'm trying to get up to 2 posts per month. I haven't managed yet. I doubt I'll manage this this month, but okay. Then another thing I would really mention for people, if they're interested, is that they check out What Ho Frog Demons by Chris Kutalik, with a little bit of supporting writing and illustration by me. It rounds out the Slumbering Ursine Dunes. I think it's pretty cool. If you like the rest of the Slumbering Ursine Dunes, you'll like this one. And also, at this point, I have to apologize to Chris, because we had the first proofs come in for this book for print on demand 2 months ago.
Oh, boy.
They came in 2 months ago. And like, I looked at the proofs and I was like, oh, I know exactly what's wrong. I have to add 1 page at the beginning for the interior, so it'll like align nicely, because we removed the cover, because you have to split the files. And I have to remove a transparency around some arrows, because it's printing as a big black block instead. That's easy. And then I procrastinated. And here we are now in January for something that that should have taken me an hour to fix. So my deepest apologies. And if anybody's listening to this, like once the proofs come out and Chris is going to announce it and all the Hydra's going to announce it, and you know, Hobbs maybe will announce it as well, please go check it out, because I think it's really nice. And it has some lovely maps by Carl Stjernberg, also known as
Wizard
Skull Fungus.
Yeah, Skull Fungus. Yeah,
Skull Fungus.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Yes. Very familiar with him on Instagram, right?
Yes, he has some of my favorite maps all around. So it's a shout out. You should check him out as well.
There you go. So if you want to reach me, I'm on Twitter at OSRN Hobbs, or my private account is at Hobbs Indeed. You can contact me at either of them. You got a Twitter account, Luca?
Yes, I do. For the games, I use at StratoMetaship.
I knew that too. Yes.
Yes. And the reason I use that instead of at WizardTFighter is because at WizardTFighter is too long.
Oh, dang it.
Twitter doesn't let you use that.
Nice.
Too many characters. Yeah.
Awesome. So do you have any last words? I feel like you covered it pretty well, buddy.
I feel like I rambled around a lot. not sure where we got. Last words. Okay, if you're on Twitter, another person I would recommend checking out for a very interesting perspective is ZXU.
Yes.
And I forget what exactly his handle is.
I'll find it.
ZXU?
It might be. I'll find it and put it in the show notes.
Check out ZXU. He's a Malaysian writer. He's also writing D&D and RPG and OSR stuff. And it's fantastic reading his things, because his perspective is so different and so refreshing that I just love reading everything he writes.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. I think the first time I saw him, he is in like Richard G's Colonial Pirate game or something. Anyway, that's esoteric. Hey, check us out on G+, MeWe, Facebook, Hobbs and Friends, or the Audio Dungeon Discord. Hey, people, it's better to burn out than to fade away.
Stroud.